Welcome to the FASD Success Show, the only podcast where you can get real-world information about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This show will help you create calm in the chaos, have hope for the future, and more importantly, save your sanity so you don't lose your flipping mind. Now, here's your host, caregiver turned world FASD educator, Jeff Noble.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 54 of the FASD Success Show. I'm your host, Jeff Noble. I am so glad that you are here. This is the podcast that is all about creating FASD success, whether you're an individual on the spectrum, whether you're a caregiver who is helping an individual on the spectrum, or you're a frontline worker, or you're an extended family, or you're adoptive or foster or a grandparent. It doesn't matter. If you are in the trenches with an individual on the spectrum, if you are involved in their lives, then this is the podcast for you. Why? Because I get to interview some amazing people who are doing great work, who understand the disability, who are doing amazing things. And that's the best way that I've learned. And I, as a former foster parent turned speaker and educator, I've had the privilege of going all around the world and talking to some amazing people. So I said, hey, if I'm doing a podcast, I want to do it by sharing these conversations that I've had. Now, I can't share the actual conversations I've had because I wasn't recording them, hence podcast. And we're reaching out to someone today. His name is Simon. He is an amazing person. I met Simon at a conference, and I met him because I watched him speak. I listened to him speak, and he did such an amazing job. And what he was talking about was his relationship with his daughter, and he was talking about housing, and he was talking about basically FASD proofing a house that he had purchased for her. And so I was like, man, this guy gets it. He knows what's up. And I know a lot of parents are like, what's going to happen in the future? Housing is an issue with individuals on the spectrum, and it is something we need to nail down, to have acquired in order for them to have a healthy outcome. It's one of the main success factors. So we are going to talk about that. We're going to talk about school, because he is also a principal. So he's been there, done that. And frankly, I like his... I love his honest demeanor. He's a very nice man. But before I do that, guys, I don't know where you live, but it's cold. It is so cold. Isn't that like the Johnny Carson? It is so cold. And then everybody used to go, how cold is it? But I don't have a joke. It's so cold, though, that my dog has to wear booties. I got to put booties on my dog because I'm walking and he's putting his paws up because it's too cold. I said, that's too cold. You know how cold it is? It's cold like when your eyelashes start freezing together and like, you know, in your nose. And you know, I don't want to get too deep into it, but you know what I mean? It's cold, man. You need long johns. And it's tough because you got to go outside or else your animals, my animals, my dogs in this case, will drive me nuts if I don't. And I know it's tough because I got a little lady in my life too, Olivia, my daughter, and so that is tough with work and her having a bound so much energy. And so then I think about you guys, and I know a lot of folks because, you know, I talk to caregivers every week and in coaching calls. And we're in a heavy period right now. We are in a heavy period. And so that might lead to more screen time, more movies, like more video games, especially if the weather is not cooperating, if this home learning is not cooperating. And this was one of the themes in our call. Was, you know, if it's for the next month or so, like, you're not going to ruin your kids. So if you have to make things really relaxed in terms of accommodations to get through, do not worry about it. You are not going to mess them up. We just want to make sure everybody gets through with their mental health intact, because our guys do have sensitive mental health. I'm sure you have, you know, your mental health is also sensitive. So give yourself grace, give your kids grace. It's especially if the weather is absolutely freezing. We will get through this together. And how do we do that? We do that a few ways. One way is that you can stay connected. You can stay connected to my show by subscribing, whether you listen to iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher or even Google. Google Podcasts. In fact, all you do is you have to say, okay, Google, play the FASD Success Show, and then it will literally just play it. So I'm hoping I didn't set off some googly machines, but I digress. So you can stay connected by subscribing to the show, so you get, as soon as we put out a new release, you will get that right to your phone. Isolation is the enemy here. We want to make sure that you are connected with a group of caregivers that get it. That's why we have our free group. You can find that at facebook.com/groups/FASD. Forever. And we have over 4,000 other caregivers in there who are helping and supporting each other. You want to make sure you do that. So hopefully I can fill the next hour because we are looking for things to do with some education and some entertainment. I don't know how entertaining will be, but you're certainly going to get educated because my guest today. So I want to get to that right away. So my guest, saw him at a conference, really awesome, part of the FASD Parent Advisory Committee, which does amazing work. And I got to tell you, I recorded this in the evening time. And Simon, I like to say that because I feel more educated. Simon, he worked all day as a principal, and then we had tons of technical issues. So he is a patient man because he could have said, F it, I'm out of here, and he would have been within his right. But not only did he show up, but he shows up and he delivers and he tells it like it is. So who am I talking about? A little bit more in depth. Simone is an adoptive father of a courageous young woman who deals with every FASD issues every single day. He has a daughter on the spectrum. He has a master's degree in education and did his thesis on the impact of children with FASD on parent relationships with the school, community, and each other. Simon has been working in the Manitoba public school system for 30 years as a teacher, vice principal, and assistant superintendent. He is presently a professor at the University St. Boniface in the Faculty of Education. Simone's areas of interest are educational leadership, second language learning, Aboriginal education, and FASD. He's fully bilingual. He's got an awesome accent. Simon has been involved in public speaking engagements on FASD for the last 10 years, both in the educational settings and provincial conferences. This guy is no joke. He's a really good bloke. He knows what he's talking about. So let's get to the interview. All right, let's go. All right, everybody, here I am, finally, after some technical issues with Simon LaPlante. Simon, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
I know it's late. I know you're tired, I can tell, so I really appreciate you doing this. That's because you are working with the schools right now, correct?
I'm a school principal, yes, in Manitoba.
There's lots of changes you're dealing with.
Of course. I mean, that's the essence of a pandemic, that we have to adapt to all the changes that as we confront the situations. I think our teachers are working very, very, very hard to meet the need of all the kids, that it be at school or online or remote learning. And that, I mean, there's been a huge learning curve for our teachers in terms of integrating technology. And but in my case, my teachers have responded very well. The parents have been extremely supportive. Many of our kids are doing very well with remote learning. There are kids that are struggling, especially kids with that have some needs or specific exceptional needs. Many of them are struggling with that technology, but we're making adjustment. We find other ways to reach these kids and meet their educational needs, for sure.
Well, so this must, you know, being a caregiver yourself, great perspective, because what do you do if a kid is just not handling it well? Like, what do you tell the parents? Because they're afraid they're probably being behind. Like, what? How do you comfort them and saying, like, you know, we're not mad at you. This is just hard, especially if your kid has an intellectual disability.
For sure. And I think the first step is to ensure that you have a school division or school that believe in the concept of inclusion. I mean, inclusion is about a system that meet the needs of every kid and whatever their needs are. It's a very difficult to achieve, as you can very well imagine. Most of our systems tend to integrate kids, which is we're giving them a lot of support, you know, EAs and extra resource and all that. So, but in the end, we want them to fit the system, where inclusion required a system to change. And that's very difficult to achieve. So, I mean, I think people work very hard and in the education system to meet the need of all these exceptional students, of all students. But for the parents and the caregiver, I mean, if your child is struggling at home or is struggling, the first step is really to reach out to the school, to talk to the teacher, phone the teacher, phone the and don't start with the principal. Start with your homeroom teacher, right? Like, see what's happening. And don't go in there with, like, trailblazing, mad, because it's not going to solve anything. Most teachers want to work very collaboratively with their teacher. They want to be like to have with their parents. They want to have that complicity. In French, on appelle on the complicité, which is working together, tightly together, right? But sometimes when you have difficult children with exceptional needs, I mean, you get tired and emotion takes over and it becomes difficult to have a conversation when we get emotional. And as a caregiver working with my child, there were times where I was very emotional. And even if I worked in the system, right, I would become very emotional at that time. I still remember this old teacher who was working with my child. And there was a morning where I walked in and I was exhausted and started to cry. And he said, you know, Simone, he says, I got a plan. I'll talk to you later this afternoon because I got a plan. And that really made my day, right? It just changed the day. And when he retired, that was his retirement. And I asked him, do you remember that day? He said, well, for sure. I said, did you have a plan? He said, not at all. He said, that's what I knew you wanted to hear. And he did put a plan in place. It wasn't
right. Funny. But it was just nice to have someone comfort you, because
exactly.
You have a great perspective, Simo. You're a principal, but you're also a parent.
I was also a superintendent, assistant superintendent. So I have an understanding of the whole system. How it works. Yeah.
And not only that, but you sit on the parent advisory board with the Canada FASD Research Network.
Yes, sir.
And you do before COVID, you were a public speaker as well. And that's how I got introduced to you with your work through CanFASD. And I watched you at the Vancouver conference in front of 800 people absolutely hold court. You were great. And I'm not just blowing smoke, like, you know, trying to get favor, but it was amazing because you just went up there and you spoke the truth.
Yes.
And all the caregivers and the frontline workers were just nodding their head, yes, yes. And so ever since then, I said, if there's ever a format, I got to talk to this guy. And that's exactly why I reached out. So I'm looking forward to this, because there's you're on both sides of the coin. You've seen it all. Were you a educator before you were a parent?
Yes, I was.
Okay, excellent. And on my podcast, what we like to do is like the superhero, because we believe that's what folks like you are, the origin story, like a Marvel movie. So we want to see how Simon became, you know, all the things we just mentioned. And you are a caregiver. So can you give us a little backstory about your kid and growing up? And usually the first one I ask is, when did you first hear or someone say about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder to you?
Oh, it was we were struggling with our child, and we were not sure what was going on, but about when the child was about seven. We became aware of the concept of FASD, and that's when we started to connect the dot, right, and looking at the behavior and what was going on. And so, but it took a long time, and my child was 16 years old when she was finally diagnosed. I mean, as you well know, they often get a ADHD diagnosis first and then, you know, an FASD diagnosis. So it took a while, but it was a long road. It was a long road. It was a hard road, but in the end, I think it made my wife and I better parents. We consider ourselves, often we consider ourselves professional parents. We we can handle situations that people have very, cannot even imagine, you know.
People listening can.
People
listening totally get it. This is a total FASD podcast, you know, with moms listening and moms and dads. And let's talk about that a little bit, because you were an educator before. So you have this young, beautiful lady, and you're using all the things that you learned as an educator. And was it just not connecting?
Not working at all.
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to be polite.
It's not working at all. And the fact of reality in those days, I mean, very few of us had any idea of what FASD. You're talking in the 80s, 90s. Mm-hmm. And even today, as you mentioned, I do a lot of public presentation. I go to schools. I work with them. And there's a lot of teachers and educators that they heard about the mm-hmm. the FASD. They have somewhat of a understanding what it is, but when it comes to the behavior and the challenges, they're not prepared, and it's because it's a challenging situation, right?
It's challenge. The kid looks
for everybody.
The individual on the spectrum looks normal, talks normal. And then acts this way. If you're not educated about FASD, you take people at face value, right? Yep. Not brain value. And so it looks willful, purposeful. And so then the behavior modification comes in.
And often in schools, and I don't know across, but and what I've noticed is that in urban centers, often the child services, they turn to the town that are on the edge of the urban area, because there are family that are willing to take these kids, the kids as foster children. But what happened is that those community and those school community are not necessarily prepared to suddenly have in their midst children that have FASD. That create tensions, often create the difficulty for the child to be accepted in the community. And I've heard, you know, horror story like that, where it just backfire, and because the community and the school community is simply not aware or prepare or doesn't understand what these children deal with.
Because it's not in mainstream education.
That's right.
Like yourself, it was still early, you know. But when you were going through school, I'm sure, you know, they didn't have any topics on. Do you make sure with what you know now, do you try and include it in for your staff, like training on FAS?
Oh yeah, and I share with my staff, and I've shared with my staff in my school division about our experiences, and people are very aware, and it has been beneficial, because we're always looking at, you know, the whole child and what's going on and what are the parents need in terms of support, and I often say to my staff, I will never discipline a child as a principal without knowing his background, without knowing the family situation, because I can cause irreparable damage to that relationship, because to be successful with children, that have any exceptionalities. It's all about relationship with the child, but also with the parents and the family. And so I never, like I said to my staff, I will never discipline a child without knowing where that child comes from, what is his abilities, what is capacities, what is challenge, because you can cause more damage in doing that, not only to the child, but to the relationship with the family.
Do you find yourself ever advocating in front of other colleagues, right, who might be in an administrative position who have not made that paradigm shift?
No, I don't think I would say advocating. I'd say helping, supporting, educating, reminding people that, it's not, the behavior is not always voluntary.
Yeah, that's it's organic.
The behavior is a reaction to a situation or to something that was said or not said, or a look, or some how there's so many triggers for these children, right? So I think when it comes to my colleagues, administrator, I think they're very well informed. I value their expertise, and they're very supportive of these children.
And I also assume then you're supportive of the teachers when they don't have a good day, right? Like we
absolutely
said, when they lose it, right? Like when they can't manage it, because it is hard. You can know everything about FASD, and it still be so exhausting that you're human once you're tired and you can't think straight, and then you become reactive.
That's where in school system, I mean, you have to work as a team. Like there's got to be teams around these, surrounding these children. It's wrapping these children, right? So that when the teacher is at the end of its rope, like there's people that the teacher can go to, or that can reach out to, and that it be me or the vice principal or the resource teachers or an EA that is in my experience, EAs have a lot of success with these children because they tend to follow them from year to year to year, and that's the relationship that I talked about is so important with these children. So many of our educational assistants are very successful because they follow these children for years.
Yeah. Right?
So, I mean, I remember when I was assistant superintendent, we had a situation and there was this child with FASD, these two brothers. And I suggested to the principal that if the teacher that had one of them in his classroom could go up to the next grade with that child, you would have a lot less behavior issue. And that's exactly what happened. That teacher accepted that, went up one grade to the next grade with the child who had FASD, and the behavior was cut by at least a third. And it's all because relationship, right? The child know what to expect, understand that teacher, know how this teacher reacts, and it worked well. But again, it doesn't always.
It doesn't. That was like, yeah, thank you. That's like my next segue. You're saying the professional thing to do is if they're not getting anywhere or the parents not getting anywhere, to first talk to the teacher first and try and build a relationship with the teacher.
Absolutely.
But if they're, because sometimes it comes personal bias too, right? Like not wanting to learn, like, Dr. Mella even says it about doctors with the ego a little bit, right? Like the teacher, I kind of know best. But you're then saying, then you would maybe escalate that to the principal if the kid's not getting what.
Yes, exactly. So if you're not going anywhere, and again, in my experience, I would say that the great majority of teachers want to do well and want to do good for all their kids. But there might be case where it happens where somebody, is not responding appropriately. And then, so the next step is to go to the principal. Absolutely. So you always start with the teacher and then you move to the principal. And if you're not getting anywhere with the principal, then you go to the superintendent. Yeah. There's a process that needs to be followed in education, but Yeah. So, but I don't, you know, it doesn't happen very often. I think for the most part, I think our educators are very caring people and they want to do well for their kids, for all their kids.
How are your teachers doing, especially at times like this? Like, are they burning out? Are they, you know, are they frustrated?
Well, no, I think there's certainly a high level of stress with, you know, when you have, for example, to teach in two different classrooms because you have to separate the kids have to be distanced, right?
Right.
That makes it more difficult. But for the most part, I think we do what we need to do. There is a high level of stress. Some teachers are obviously handling it better than others. But I mean, it is what it is. I mean, we're in it and we have to respond and we have to do the best we can. And from my school perspective, the parents have been super supportive, very understanding. They get it. And it's going okay. But I wouldn't say that it's true for every teacher.
I mean, I got it. I see what you're saying for sure.
I don't want to talk for all the teachers and educators. I know that some of us have, it's been very hard, but in my school.
Like in your world, for sure.
We're doing well. Yep. We're doing okay.
It starts at the top, sir. And if someone understands, like your life experience, you would say has made you a better person and educator, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Having raised a child with FASD has made me, has helped me certainly appreciate and understand the level of frustration and level of stress and that parents and teachers can experience when working with children with these exceptionalities.
Now, speaking of your daughter, she's an adult, and because you talked about
she's an adult and she's doing fantastic. She lives on her own. She works and not full days, but she's working every day.
Cool.
And we're so proud of her and she's doing great and very positive, living on her own. I mean, we're supporting her, but you know,
this is what I want to get into the nitty and gritty, because the one thing parents want to know is like, how can they help their kids attain that level of independence
interdependence?
But if we could touch on a few, you know, like things that
let me start.
That helps her. Yeah, please.
Tough love doesn't work.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I mean, forget that, because tough love, all you're gonna do is you're gonna have a child ending up on the street. So, forget tough love.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about that. We know that these children have a hard time understanding consequences and cause to effect. We all know that. Like, it's so well documented. So you got to be supportive. So before they're 18 years old, you got to, in my experience, have to prepare for that, because there's going to be financial cost. You need to have a diagnostic. Because without a diagnostic, when they turn 18, all the support disappear, because they're considered adults. And they, as an adult, can fire anyone they want. They don't need to continue to be supported by X, Y, and Z,
right.
Z, because they're adults under the law. We all know they're not ready.
Yeah, you're speaking like my sister. My sister is what happens. Like, my sister is truant and has an addiction, and I think she's on the spectrum. So you're preaching to the choir, and I appreciate that you're preaching, though. By the way,
No, I'm not preaching. I'm saying though that you need a diagnosis.
Right.
You need to prepare with financially, because when they turn 18, you have to make a choice. Either you support them, or you let them go. And we know that if you decide to let them go, chances are that they're going to live on the street, they're going to be homeless, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So my wife and I, when our daughter turned 18, we made the decision to support her, because all the support. So First of all, we're in a good financial situation. So I know that it's not the same for everybody, or it's not affordable to anybody. But what we decided to do is buy a house, a small house where she lived. And of course, the house got quickly redecorated right away, right? Holes in the walls, right. Like there was a lot of turmoil. But at least there was a roof and there was food in the fridge, and it was a safe place, you know. So in that context, I learned a great deal about what we need in terms of accommodation or a room or a house for people with FASD. And I can talk about that. Like, there's, if you want.
Yeah,
I
mean, keep going. People are listening, man.
So housing for people with FASD has to be, in my experience, there has to be some very specific things that needs to be put in place in the housing wherever they're being housed. So in the context of my daughter, once she went over that phase of, you know, punching and holes in her and redecorating the house, we renovated the whole house. And so I created small rooms with specific function, so that, for example, the bedroom, there was a closet with places to hang clothes, drawers that in the closet, shelves in the closet, but you couldn't move the closet out of the bedroom because it was nailed to the wall.
Yeah, yeah, okay, that's right. So you made sure it wasn't going anywhere, so it wasn't
going anywhere. So you didn't have like very little furniture. And a big bed, so that the big bed was difficult to get out of the room.
Because that's what
they move their stuff all over the place, right, all the time.
Yeah.
So creating small space with very specific functions. So the bathroom became where the shower was, where the makeup was. Everything was in the bathroom, and there was a place for the makeup, so that the makeup didn't end up everywhere in the house. The living room, I made a mistake to buy a sofa. I wouldn't do that again. It would be chairs, because right, then the person cannot fall asleep on the chair, or as easy than it is on a sofa. And then you don't want the sofa to become the bed. So like just taking away the sofa, so that if the person wants to go to sleep, she has to go sleep in her bed in his bed.
I agree.
So. And then a very functional kitchen, so that the person, I made a mistake to buy a table. Like, if I was to redo it, I would do a nook with the table attached to the wall, so you can't move anything, right? And then all my walls, most of the walls, for example, from the floor to 4 feet high, was I put plywood. But decorative plywood, so you can punch holes anymore in that wall. And if you don't want plywood, you can double your Jeeprock with half inch Jeeprock double, so it becomes an inch of Jeeprock. That's pretty hard to punch a hole in there.
Yeah. So you FASD proof the house, and instead of getting mad at her, you know what the disability is, and you know, yes, this is how it's going to be. So I have to accommodate that. And listen, folks, he's telling you what he would have done differently even.
So my doors, for example, all my doors, the doors became full wood, full wood door, like not those cheap door.
Right. So it's fully like thick wood, like a hobbit thick oak door, you know, from the Shire,
or pine door, you can buy cheaper pine door, like solid wood, so that, you know, then they, but, and for in our case, I mean, that came later, and by that time she was much more functional and she was doing so good. So, but if you were to start, let's say with your child that has FASD, when they turn 18 and you decide to house them, that's what I would do. I would upgrade. I would make sure that I would renovate or upgrade so that it becomes difficult to punch holes in the wall. It becomes difficult to move furniture, or there should be a minimum of furniture. Everything else must be, it should be attached to the floor or to the wall, so they can't move all their stuff all the time. And small spaces, like a small living room, small bedroom, you know, otherwise it's the bigger the space, the more difficult, complicated it becomes for them to manage that space.
What about dishes?
We had a dishwasher.
Yeah, so a dishwasher. But did you have a lot of dishes or a few plates?
Of course. But because if you don't have the dishwasher, you know what's going to happen. It's just going to pile up.
Yeah.
But so having a dishwasher makes it a little easier for them to keep on top of doing the dishes. I mean, there was time where the person gets overwhelmed, so you have to go in and, you know, you clean up and you do the dishes. But as they grow older and older, less and less and less. I mean, they learn to manage that.
So that's what you were saying. So at first, the support and hands-on was more intensive, but as the years went by, absolutely, and she matured, right?
Absolutely. She's into trying recipes and making food for herself, and like it's awesome.
Yeah, it's that awesome. That is so good, but it's so important because these topics aren't really touched on. I parents ask me, like, they're considering, like, do we do a granny suite for our kids, right? Like, you know, a off suite where we are, like a basement apartment, because of their deficits. They struggle with that. What about financially in terms of bills? Do you assist in that? Like, what is sort of the system that happens there? Because we know of deficits in executive functioning, planning, organizing, sequencing, doing all that stuff could be an issue for some of our guys.
Well, somehow you have to help them manage their finance, which means that you may have to control it because they, you know yep. how they burn money very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of time and teaching and taking your time, and they learn that the value of money, but it takes a long time, and you have to be prepared for losses. You will lose money.
My gosh.
You will lose money. There's no question about it.
And
you will have costs, lawyer costs. You will have repair costs. You will have. There's all kind of cost that comes with FASD.
But all of it worth it to see where she is now.
Exactly.
Like that's the
investment. But at the same time, I mean, financially, my wife and I are pretty solid, right? So it's not. I don't know that this model is sustainable for everybody, right?
Sure, but it's good to hear how somebody does it. Right,
yeah, because, it is possible.
Right,
is
that's possible. Right. Because if you know, I just interviewed. It's actually out now. I interviewed a young woman. She's 29 years old, and you know, she has an apartment, works full time, but it's just, you know, she has a trustee. But there's set up around them still to help them be successful.
And then you also have to think in terms of end of life. So my wife and I are not getting any younger.
Right.
So we have organized a trust for our young daughter. And once we are unable to take care of her, hopefully she will be fairly independent, and I believe she will be, but there will be somebody to help with the financing, the money, and getting, you know, once we go, then there's a whole, as you know, there's a whole bunch of things to take care of, and somebody will be supporting her in that. So we already have identified some, like, so you as a caregiver, if you really want, you got to think miles ahead, because you can't leave it to the last minute. Here's another example. Once we go away, what about her medical history? What about her financial history? What about her justice history? Like, so everything we have, we all have that documented in a binder, so that when we're ready to pass on, the binder will be given to either my daughter or to the trustee, so that we have a history, the history or medical history or educational history or work history is recorded, so that like somebody can pick up and, okay, that's what has happened. This is where, that's very important to document all of that.
Yeah, this is great because it's practical, it's real life, and it's great advice because, even if you're listening to this right now and your kids say 10 years old, someone who was very influential teaching me about FASD said, put them on every list, waiting list, as soon as you're allowed to put them on it, even if it's years, because the years go by that quick.
That's right. That's right.
But
you need the diagnosis.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's
because
tough.
You hear people talking, well, I don't want to label my child. Mm-hmm. Well, I get it. But you know what? The diagnosis is going to open doors. It's going to make a difference, especially when they turn 18.
Did the diagnosis make a difference to her in terms of
absolutely
realizing she wasn't, doing this on purpose?
Well, no. And many of them will deny that they have FASD, or they don't recognize it, or they say it's something else. But and FASD never comes by itself. There's always other issues, mm-hmm. that it be physical issues or other emotional issues. But it doesn't matter. The fact that the child has a diagnosis opened doors, because even in concept of this, let's say for the school, does it matter that the child who's misbehaving or has a hard time understanding what's going on has a diagnosis? Well, it would help us understand what's happening, but even if it doesn't, we still have to deal with the behavior and we still have to help the child. It's that the diagnosis gives you strategies, because all disorders have different strategies in order to help the person. So to me, a diagnosis is really important because it helps us understand where the child's coming from. It gives us strategies in terms of how to help the child, but in the end, and then when they turn 18, it provides opportunity to access programs like, for example, EIS, like unemployment insurance. They have all kind of program for people that have disabilities, right? But if you don't have a diagnosis, then it's hard to access these programs.
Yeah, and you're right about the labeling. And someone I heard somewhere said they're already labeled. They're labeled the bad kid, the rude kid.
Yeah,
a diagnosis of FASD.
And those are what I call unhelpful label. They're not helpful. They're reactive. They're mean. They're the result of the own individual frustration, and they don't help the child. But an official diagnosis from a psychologist or a doctor, that makes a difference.
How on your journey, how would you take care of yourself? And I'm sure that you were better at it sometime, in some stages better than others, but what did you do to maintain your own sanity?
Well, first of all, was to maintain our couple. We've been married for 35 years.
And, oh, good.
Yeah. So this year, actually, 35 years. On December 28th, just a few weeks ago. And so the support we got from our families, so that we had time for my wife and I to get, to find each other again and be together. And there was a lot of support that's why you need to have a lot of support from friends and family. So you need to be open about
the
situation. Yeah. So you got to be honest and you got to explain, and educate people about the disorder. You have to be open about your challenges so that people understand. I often say to parents, kids who misbehave, often the parents are being labeled as ineffective parents, not good parents. Mm-hmm. My experience as a principal is some of the best parents, or the people who have the best parenting skill I've ever met, had very difficult children to deal with, because they don't have a choice. You have to develop these parenting skills because you have a child who's not responding to normal parenting skill.
Yeah, so that's the grief and loss coming in there too, though, to realize, oh, I have to put in the effort to get the skills.
Absolutely. And that's the challenge. And if you embrace that, then you become very effective parents. So, but in terms of taking care of yourself, like I said, you need to reach out to the family, to friends, so they understand what's happening. So, you know, I have friends that if my wife and I went on a vacation outside, you know, whatever vacation. Well, I have when my daughter was in her house, she was in her 20s. I mean, I had a friend she could call if something broke in the house, and he would be right there to fix it. No question asked. If she needed to help with whatever was going on in her life, there was another friend she trusted. She could phone that person, and the person would be right there to support her, like do her grocery, help her with grocery, whatever. So I had a number of friends and family members that were ready to the standby. They knew to help her while we were on a 5-6 day vacation. You need to find those support. You cannot do it yourself by yourself. It's impossible.
Simon, did you have family that wasn't receptive?
No. We bought the Damaged Angel.
Remember? Yeah, Damaged Angels. Yep. Bonnie Buxton.
Yeah, we bought that book, and the whole family read it from both sides. So on my side and on my wife's side, all the family member read that book, so they understood what the situation was.
Wow, that is incredible.
And it's very important, because I know so many families that have totally fall apart because as soon as the child comes with a FASD comes in the family, the whole family falls apart. Nobody wants their own children to be witnessing these kind of behavior, right? So, and suddenly nobody wants to visit anybody, and people become very isolated. And that's one of the biggest danger of being a caregiver of a child with FASD, is you become socially isolated.
Especially now.
Exactly. That with the COVID, that's a double whammy, right? But even without COVID, I know a lot of families that have children with FASD that are, they're totally isolated because nobody, no children, no brother-in-law or no sister-in-law wants their children to be exposed to that kind of behavior because they don't understand it. Mm. I remember doing a presentation, and there was an old man. He was probably, well, I shouldn't say old. He was in his 60s. I'm probably as old as he was.
You're young at heart, Simo. Young at heart.
And then he showed up at the end of my presentation, and he was crying. And I said, what's going on? Well, he says, my whole family is falling apart, because it turns out that one of his child had a baby, and that woman had been drinking. Well, for whatever reason, and the child had FASD, but nobody knew. There was no diagnosis. So there would be family supper, and then, you know, the whole supper would turn to a disaster when that child started to misbehave. And so he was bawling because in his mind he was losing his family, and he didn't understand what was going on. And suddenly having an opportunity to listen to what we went through, and I gave him Bonnie Buxton books, and I said, you read that, and you make sure all your children read this book, and you will get your family back.
I'm going to assume that you have listened to every one of my episodes, but in case you haven't, Simo, one of the episodes is actually with the Bonnie's kid. I did it. So if you ever want to peruse, she's actually a friend of mine on Facebook. We talked.
Oh, I'd love to see that
one. Yeah, you can listen to her where she is now at 40 years old, and she is kicking butt. Yes. She works in the movie industry. She's like a site location. She does the site locations and stuff.
That's awesome.
You would love to listen to that. So yeah, I had one week I had Brian on. Right. Because, you know, Bonnie was ill now. I had Brian on and then I had Colette on the next week. So yeah, I know you just missed those episodes because you're a huge fan of the show. I get it. I get you. You know, you're, you know, still a full time dad, still, you know, working with the education. But let's not forget, you're also with the Family Advisory Committee with Ken FDC.
Yes.
Yes. Can I tell the listeners what that is and what your role is?
Well, we're a committee of the Canada FASD Research Network, and our role is to really advise a researcher of caregiver needs in terms of raising children with FASD or supporting adults with FASD. So we meet once a month online and discuss various research. We review some of the research. We offer suggestions as to where maybe a researcher could focus the research. Because, I mean, changes and understanding comes from solid research. You know, like, it has to be supported by the research. Yeah, my testimony or the fact that I've lived through, it's one thing and it's valid.
Yep.
But in a sense, it also needs to be like those concepts I've talked about in terms of housing. Like, we need to research, make sure that the research support that and not, right, so that it becomes models that can be implemented across our country.
And
that's what this committee does. And we also have now established a committee, right, of adults with FASD. So that works with us as a committee of caregivers with of children with FASD. So we're very excited about that.
And one of the things that your committee did that is tangible for my viewers is Dr. Mella's medication algorithm was from your committee's suggestion about medication.
Yes. Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, did you also mention, because he's doing CBD is his next thing. I don't know if you guys were the ones that, you know, that mentioned.
I'm not sure about that one
here or there, but that's where it starts. So I love Ken FASD because they listen to you and then the researchers listen to you and then you have the pulse and know what the people need information on. They go out, research it, and then you're able to put that out. So that's
exactly
that's a really awesome way to get involved. Here's my last question for you. I want to know if what would you tell, like, let's just say a mom and their kid's like, you know, 15 years old and, you know, 30s seems a long ways away, right? Like we said, stretch it out. And they're struggling. Like, what would you tell this parent?
I would say to her, you got to look at your resources. What's available to you? What can you access? What kind of support do you have? You will not be successful by yourself. You can't do it. Nobody can do this by themselves. Well, maybe some, but
Very rare.
Very rare.
The kids because need so much care, right? Like
exactly. The energy and the resources and that you require to make that kid successful. You know, so you need to look at your network of friends, network of family, like what's available, who's supportive to you, you know, what's your capacity in terms of finance.
Did you, while she was growing up, did you focus on any passions or hobbies to take your mind off?
You're darn right, I did.
Yeah, what were the kind of things? Okay,
cool. I'm a hunter, I'm a fisherman, I'm an outdoor man, and every opportunity, and I would bring my child with me. My daughter loves fishing, and but you got to find things that make, you know, that are for you.
But, and let's leave the listeners on this, but everything you're saying is from your experience, because at the end of the day, where she's at now, all worth it. The relationship now, her life now, it was worth every heartache and situation that you went through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it was a long road, but the reward is phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
Awesome. Listen, it's already been, almost an hour already. I'll tell you this though. I appreciate it's late, folks. Doesn't matter when you're listening to this, but Simone worked all day, had technical issues, and then still showed up and then gave us all the goods. So I just want to thank you for doing, I recognize that. And I just want to thank you for doing that and giving this excellent information to my audience. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jeff. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. That was so awesome. Simone. I think I'm going to say it that way. That sounds way better. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much. I know you were tired. It was a long day, but you really brought the heat, and I think you made some really good points. I just want to cover a few of them. Right out of the bat, right? Inclusion is about a system that meets the needs of every kid, whatever their needs are. Most of our systems integrate kids. In the end, they want the kid to fit the system. Wow, that was really powerful. And why we need inclusion and to meet everybody's needs the best that we can. Like, for example, you know what I liked what he said? I will never discipline a child without knowing the background of that child. What are the challenges? What are the kids' abilities? You know, where do they struggle? Because unless I know the child's background and their abilities, my discipline or my intervention can cause more harm than good. It could cause a lot more damage. And we see that. We see that with different therapies for individuals on the spectrum. We see that when a behavior modification is being used on a kid or an individual on the spectrum who doesn't have the proper skills in those brain domains and the proper capacity to be able to, you know, to use behavior modification. Anyways, I'll get off my soapbox, but I think that's really important. And you like what he said about the behavior as a reaction to something, what was said or what was not said, a look, there are so many triggers. I think a part of that, what he's talking about, if we want to go from a science perspective and a research perspective, we know that individuals on the spectrum struggle with executive functioning. And executive functioning, is like the parent brain, and it reins in your other systems, like your fight or flight system. And what ends up happening is also because of that damage in your executive functioning, it also affects your ability to do to have threat perception. So a lot of times individuals on the spectrum are reacting a certain way because they do not have the proper threat perception. They don't know if it's a threat or not. And they're recognizing things as a threat when they shouldn't be. And so they go into their fight or flight. So I really like how he says that. The behavior is a reaction to something that was said or not said, a look, right, relating to threat perception. There are so many triggers. And then he talks about the importance of having a team around these children because he says that you get emotional, and you do. I've been there. If you spend any time with amount of time with an individual on the spectrum, you've been there. You get upset. You get tired and you get emotional. I really like that word. You really get emotional. So having a team around this, the individual, and having a team around the team that does the primary care in relation to a teacher. So having a teacher being able to go talk to somebody else or tag somebody in, like an EA or a TA or just someone to outlet to, so that the kid doesn't get the brunt of the frustration with an improper intervention. And I love when he talked about his daughter. I think that was so key. This guy has been there. He's been through it. And isn't that great? Now, this is one man's perspective with one individual on the spectrum with his daughter. Hey, what do we know? We know that if we know one individual, that means we just know one individual. So everybody is absolute different. But I think he gave some really great insight, not only to the way his daughter worked, but also to the way his daughter's brain worked. And what he did say, what does not work is tough love. tough love does not work. He talks about how his daughter is not working full days, but she works every day. And that is a huge win. We know because of the capacity and environmental limitations for our guys, we know that like a full-time job is a lot. It's very full, but they can still work every day. It's not going to be 40 to 60 hours a week. It's just, for a lot of our guys, it's not the case. It's not healthy even for us to do that, especially in times like this. So I think he purchased a small house. What he did was he made the room small. He made the bed big so she couldn't take the bed from the room. What he also did was no couch, just chairs. And what he would have changed was having the actual table, like a fold-out table, I guess, that you would sort of see in an RV, you know, to make sure that that it can't go anywhere. It can't get rearranged. There's no couch so that, you know, she had to sleep in the bed, made sure there was food there. Also, you know, managing the finances. I suggest getting a trustee as soon as you can with that, because he said, except losses, there will be financial losses as you figure this out. Now, that's not a positive, but no going in it. But it is possible. See, it wasn't that amazing how he said that it is possible. And you have to think miles ahead. And so you might be listening to this and saying, well, my kid's only 5, 10, 15, but it goes quick. And learning the model from Dr. Jackie Pye, which she has been on our podcast as well, the Towards Healthy Outcomes model, housing is a really big thing. So I just want to thank him for sharing that. Not only his school background and his school understanding, but his understanding as a parent and how he talked about the importance of having family on board and making time for him and his wife, making that relationship time, because I know that could be tough. I'm not a relationship guy. Like, I'm not a marriage counselor. In fact, I'm not a doctor, lawyer, social worker. I'm just a guy who absolutely loves this community, loves caregivers, loves the individuals on the spectrum and those that work with them. And I learned through this. I learned like this. And I just want to say, if you're at, you know, this is the end of show, the end of show club here. If you've listened to the end of here, I just want to say that I think you're an absolute badass. In fact, your stock in my awesome index has gone up 78.8% since you started listening to this. That's how favorable I think of you. And I believe that you could do this. Now, when I opened the show and I said it's a slog, it is a slog. You won't ruin your kids. Be gracious to yourself. We will get through this. Mental health is the most important thing. Not only yours, but your loved ones on the spectrum and your family. Use this time to build relationships. Use this time to reconnect. Use this time to learn how to regulate not only yourself, but your loved one on the spectrum. Those are true skills. Those are lifelong skills that your kid could use to have a very, very a successful life and change a lot of different outcomes. I wouldn't worry so much about algebra or, you know, social science, unless they love it. And that's no dig, but that's just what I believe. And please take my opinion with a grain of salt. Again, you are a badass. You are getting through this. If you are listening to this, hopefully you are doing something productive, or you are at least, you know, driving and getting some quiet time for yourself. Your kids aren't trying to be assholes. You know, everybody's in this tough. And I know that you're tired and you've been going through a lot, and you're not an asshole either. It's really tough. And we're all going to get through this, getting through this together. That's by hooking up with us at our community at facebook.com/group/FASD forever. It is by subscribing to the podcast. It is just by trusting your gut that you are an awesome parent and your kids are awesome kids. All right. Guess what? I got a really awesome episode next week. They're all awesome. I get that, but they just keep getting better and better and better and better and better and better, because I hopefully am getting better and better and better and better and better. If you listen to the end like this, don't hesitate to write me, jeff@fasdforever.com. I freaking love reading reading emails from listeners. I love interacting. It's what we can do now until we can see each other face-to-face again. All right. Again, be gentle. I freaking love you, and I will see you back here next week. All right. Bye-bye.